please rise.
Proceed in the case of Rodriguez versus Rodriguez.
May it please the court, Ms. Jo Chris Lopez and Mr. Charles H. Robertson will present argument for petitioner. Ms. Lopez will open for 10 minutes. Mr. Robertson will then continue for 10 minutes.
Good morning. This appeal concerns a divorce action. The only aspect of the divorce action appealed is the trial court's child support determination. I must tell the court that we did not plant the high school students in the audience in order to put undue pressure on the court. First, as a way of background, Mr. and Mrs. Rodriguez were divorced in 1989. The child support was set at $2,500 for one child based on Mr. Rodriguez's monthly net resources of $8,900. The Court of Appeals reversed the child support award, holding that in child support cases involving high resource obligors, the court cannot award child support over the percentage amount on any basis other than the proven dollar amount of the child's needs. This case raises two essential questions. First, what factors can the trial court consider in setting child support for high income obligors? And second, whether the Court of Appeals interpretation of the relevant family code provisions establishes a scheme which favors children of lower resource obligors in violation of the Equal Protection Clause of our state and federal constitutions. I will address the first question, and Mr. Robertson intends to address the second, the constitutional infirmities argument in the second part of the argument.
Ms. Lopez,
yes, sir.
Do I understand you? You understand the Court of Appeals to say that if they award more than $800 a month, which is 20% of $4,000, if they award more than that amount, then they can only do so strictly on needs as opposed to the guidance?
Yes, sir. The Court of Appeals opinion holds in Rodriguez that in high obligor cases, the only relevant evidence after the percentage amount is the proven dollar amount of the child's needs. Now, taken in context with the other relevant provisions of the family code, it is correct that a child's need determines child support. This has always been the law of the state of Texas. The problem is that the Court of Appeals opinion has not made this statement or intended this statement in the traditional scheme established by the family code and the decades of family law cases that address the award and the determination of child support. Rather, without giving guidance to the trial court, the Court of Appeals states that needs are the determining factor without stating how you determine those needs. Such evidence is the only relevant evidence. We have prepared and placed before you, Your Honors, an exhibit of the relevant family code provisions with respect to child support. It is our position that together these sections comprise the child support guidelines of this state and that the sections must be and can be read together. This position is not only reasonable, it is supported by the guidelines. If you look at section 14.05, the preamble to the child support guidelines states that in determining the amount of child support, the court shall be guided by the child support guidelines contained in sections 14.052 through 14.058. This is inclusive. This is direction to the trial court to read these guidelines together. The crux of the Court of Appeals opinion, however, is that section 14.055C, that's the provision dealing specifically with high resource cases, that that section alone controls this case without reference to any other provision of the code. Essentially, that this paragraph operates in a vacuum. The court goes a step further. It says that the only evidence of need relevant in this case is the list of the child expenses that were submitted by the petitioner in support of her child support request. This is the fundamental problem with the court's opinion. Section 14.055C does not exist in isolation. And if the Court of Appeals had given effect to the other provisions of this chapter, then it would have had to consider the evidence which it says it is barred by rules of law or of evidence from giving weight to. The trial courts, Your Honors, have had traditionally great and substantial discretion in setting child support and in determining a child's needs in any child support case, whether it involves high, middle, or low income obligors. The child support guidelines, when they were implemented by the legislature, were not intended to eliminate the discretion that a trial court has traditionally enjoyed, but rather to set parameters within which a trial court can set the amount of child support in any given case. Now, and the factors that the trial courts have considered are the factors that are set out in 14.052 and in 14.054 and that have traditionally been restated over and over in the opinions that deal with child support and in those opinions that I have presented to the court. Mr. Robertson will tell you in more detail that Section 14.055C is simply one provision of a very comprehensive child support scheme. The court also erroneously concludes in its opinion that because the amount ordered by the trial court is greater than the amount of expenses attributed to the child on the expense list, the difference is alimony. Now, this is directly contrary to the standard of review that applies to this case. Instead of looking for any evidence in support of the judgment and disregarding any contrary evidence, as the court is required to do, the court based its refusal to give weight to the evidence supporting the judgment on its holding that this evidence is irrelevant and that it is legally insufficient, the court said. It's alimony, and therefore we don't consider it.
If the trial court doesn't apply the guidelines, doesn't the court have an obligation to state specifically the basis on which he or she makes the award?
Absolutely, Judge, and that is what the trial court did in this case. It did it twice. First, I will tell the court that a specific request for findings of fact and proceedings of law was not requested in accordance with Section 14.07, which is the provision that deals with how you request findings of fact and a child support case. A request was made under the general rule, I believe it's 269, for findings of fact and conclusions of law. And the trial court said that its award was based on the needs of the child at the time of the order and the net resources of the parent. This was the finding.
Okay, now, well, I understand that, but you think that's specific enough to meet the requirements of the statute let's assume that that is not specific enough. We have a net resource situation that exceeds $4,000. We have a judge who awards $2,500 based not only on needs, but also net resources. So it is clear from the record that the trial court considered net resources exceeding $4,000 in a statute that says you don't consider it.
Yes, Your Honor.
How could the Court of Appeals done anything other than what it did, which is, Judge, you can't consider it above $4,000. There is nothing in the record, no statement by the trial court that says $800 did not fulfill, I mean, there was no reason to change from the guideline to 20% of the first $4,000 So the child only was entitled to $800 under that circumstance. The trial court's award of any amount over that had to be based on needs only, as we read the statute. How come the Court of Appeals could not have said that under this record?
The Court of Appeals has done exactly what you said they did, Judge. So what the Court of Appeals should have done was not apply such a restrictive interpretation to Section 14.055C. If you look at that provision, all it says is that child support over, additional amounts of child support over the percentage should be based on the proven needs of the child. Now, what the Court of Appeals says is the only needs in this case are what is, are the needs that are demonstrated on the expense list that was submitted by the petitioner. Well, if you look at the record, that is not the only evidence that the court, the trial court had before it. There was substantial evidence that I had laid out in my brief of other factors, including the totality of the circumstances of the evidence, the totality of the circumstances with respect to Mr. and Mrs. Rodriguez, the employment situation of both parties, the wage and income disparity, all of these factors. Now, if the Court of Appeals had not given such a restrictive interpretation to needs, then probably wouldn't be here, because needs is not only what you spell out on an expense list. Just as a court cannot, is not obligated to award everything that is listed for expenses, a court is not limited to just that evidence when the sufficiency of the child support is determined. My time is up.
May it please the court. Courts of Texas need your guidance. More importantly, the children of Texas need your protection. Our position is that there are three specific ways in which the interpretation of the Court of Appeals, 14055C, violate equal protection. They violate equal protection of the law, in addition, violates the rules of statutory construction. Additionally, it ignores a reasonable and constitutional way to explain any possible disparities or disagreements between 14055C and the rest of the statute. We're not here today to tell you that the child support guidelines are unconstitutional. We're not here even to tell you that 14055C is unconstitutional. We're here today to tell you that the interpretation of 14055C by the Rodriguez Court results in the denial of equal protection to thousands of children in Texas. Equal protection deals with groups of individuals, and to receive equal protection, you have to be protected from judicial action which results in a denial of that equal protection. I think none of us would dispute the fact that the right to receive support is a fundamental right that children have that's owed to them by their parents. And all children are entitled to this same consideration. You really can't have different rules for different groups of children. All children are entitled to be treated the same as privileges conferred and liabilities imposed. The problem with the Rodriguez decision is that it creates two separate and distinct classes of children. In the first class that it creates are those whose obligor parent has $4,000 or less per month in net resources. And if you look to the exhibit that we prepared for you, right inside the cover, you'll see that those parents whose children, whose parent obligor makes $4,000 or less in net resources can look to 19 separate factors. And under the Rodriguez decision, the other classification of children, which I suggest to you is a suspect classification demanding strict scrutiny, only can look to one, and that's needs of the children. And that needs of the children is defined so narrow as to make it different than it's ever been defined, either in the statute, either in the Supreme Court guidelines, or any other cases that can be cited in court.
What circumscribes the trial court's authority to award child support in excess of the guidelines, $4,000, 20% based upon the $4,000 maximum?
Well, Your Honor, I believe that in order to answer that, you have to go back and look at the broad picture. The first thing you look to is 1407 of the Code. And 1407 is that chapter, is that section of Title II of the Code that sets out that the best interest of the children shall always be the primary consideration. And to call your specific attention to the language, it says specifically that this deals with support of the children. If you look at 1407B, it says in determining the best interest of the child, the court shall consider the circumstances of the parents. So if you look at then the sections 1405-2, which sets out four factors, and you look at 1405-4, which sets out 15 evidentiary factors that are to be considered. Then you look at 1405-3, which sets out how to calculate net resources based upon taking out Social Security and such. Then you get the 1405-54, which sets out the factors. 1405-5 then says to you specifically, this section was not intended to deal with cases where there's more than $4,000 in resources. That's what 1405-5A says. I'm not really surprised that that's not in the opinion of the Court of Appeals. But if you read it, it says right up front, this section is not intended to deal with those cases. The second thing it does in 1405-5B is it sets out the percentage formula. Now, part of the confusion is that many courts have looked to 1405-5B and called it the guidelines. Well, that's far too narrow interpretation. The guidelines are 1405-2 to 1405-8 with 1407 over the whole thing. To supervise the best interest of the child is always the primary consideration. So if you look at 1405-5C and it says, in cases where the net resources are above $4,000, then you look to the needs of the child. Well, if you look back at the Supreme Court guidelines and you say, what did they say? And they essentially said the same thing with respect to 1405-4 factors. I suggest to you that the more logical way to do it is to look at 1405-5C and say, needs of the child. Well, where do we learn about the needs of the child? Well, we see that's mentioned in 1405. We see it's mentioned in 1405-2, and there are four factors there. We see that it's mentioned in 1405-4, and there are 15 there. I call your attention to the fact that the 15th factor of 1405-4 is any other reason or reason in the best interest of the child, and it talks about the parent's income. So when you look at 1405-5, there's no reason to interpret it so narrowly. You look at that and it says needs, and you say, well, how do I determine the needs? And you look to two things. You look at the other provisions of the statute. You look at decades and decades of case law that have told us what needs mean. And I suggest to the court that 1405-5C, the deletion of the word lifestyle when it transferred from the Supreme Court guidelines to the legislation that we find now that we're looking at, the elimination of lifestyle was meaningless. That was redundant. If you look at 1405-4, Section 15, it already talks about lifestyle. Any other reason or reasons. And so to delete the word lifestyle from 1405-5C means nothing.
So you conclude that the word needs is not confined to food, clothing, and shelter, those essentials necessary for the sustenance of human life.
It's never been so defined in any case law in the state of Texas. It's not defined that way in the Family Code. And I suggest to put that narrow interpretation of the word needs, you know, is damaging to the children of the state of Texas and for no good reason.
But yet the trial court cannot have unbridled discretion to
absolutely
award all the
not
child support that he or she may deem desirable in a given case based on no evidence.
Certainly agree with that, Judge, but you have to remember that there are four distinct protections. So that, you know, if you go to 14055C and you say, well, how do we do this? And the way we do it is we always have the 14052 and the 14054 factors. The judge goes outside those factors. There's protection. The judge always has the standard of review of abuse of discretion. In addition to that, something that's very important in this case, Dr. Rodriguez didn't take benefit off. He could have asked for findings, which would have told the appellate court very specifically why the support was awarded above the guidelines. He didn't ask for it. So when Justice Enix says, well, when you look at the findings, you know, there are not enough findings to protect us. There could have been, had Judge Dr. Rodriguez asked for them. He didn't ask for them. And under the cases, there's no requirement for trial court to make findings to support its decision when not requested properly. Just the option.
There's not a requirement for trial court to demonstrate why the trial court moved away from the guidelines in the order.
If you specifically fail to request the explanation of the 14057, that's the protection that's given to obligors, then all you have is the regular request for findings of fact. The regular request for findings of fact that, if you didn't agree with the ones that were made, then you file objections and you ask for additional findings of fact to protect that. When you don't do either of those things, then everything should be implied to uphold the ruling of the trial court. That's always been the law.
You may have answered my question, but you lost me in the last part of it. There is no requirement in the statute that if the trial court deviates from the guidelines, that the trial court must set forth the reasons for the deviation. You're saying that specific item has to be requested by one of the parties or the trial court, or the only other avenue then is to have requested findings by conclusions. And having failed both of those, and the standard rule that if the facts support the judge's decision
in stronger than that. The timing of those things is different. You have a shorter fuse on requesting the 14057 findings. And if you don't ask for those timely, then even though you ask for ordinary findings of fact and conclusions of law, you're not entitled to those 14057 findings that you would have been entitled to but for your failure to ask for them. And that was not done.
Is there any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
The chair will present arguments for respondent for 25 minutes.
May it please the court. We disagree that children of high resource obligors are treated any differently than those under $4,000. Up to the first $4,000, the children are treated exactly the same. In this particular case, Judge Morales told us that he perceived this to be a $4,000 standard guideline case. It's cited in the record and applied to that first $4,000, the 20% finding $800. That's not where we have complaint with Judge Morales. Our complaint deals with the amount that he awarded over the first $4,000. Almost 35% of the income over $4,000 was set aside for child support. Rodriguez is unique in one regard. This is, and I appreciate that the guidelines have not been out all that long, but this is the only case that I've seen in appellate history where guidelines were applied in excess of that supplied by statute or this court with no special need being shown. In this particular case, Judge Morales' ruling would amount to 28% of the net resource which he found in this case. And there's no needs testimony supporting that. In their brief, the petitioner sets forth a scenario where he attempts to contrast those children below 4,000 with those above. And he suggests that a judge may be justified in deviating from the guidelines and giving $100 more to a below $4,000 child that would not be so justified in the above 4,000. Justice Peoples' opinion does not so state. We do not so claim, nor do we contend that needs means bare necessities. I will confess to the court that in my opinion, having practiced before judges since Rodriguez, there has been a tendency on behalf of some judges to read needs as bare necessities. Justice Peoples goes to a great deal of trouble, including within his opinion the proposition that he does not mean to limit this to bare necessities. Of course, a difference in lifestyle can be part of the needs. We have never argued anything different. This is merely a case of failure of evidence. Needs can be interpreted as broadly as necessary to take care of all such things beyond food, clothing, housing, utilities, transportation. We think that needs can be interpreted as broadly as gymnastics lessons or as travel or any other aspect.
Do you agree with Petitioner's statement that the trial court need not delineate its reasons for deviating from the guidelines unless a specific request has been made by one of the parties?
Yes. I'm sorry.
Now, once you have just a general statement by the judge that based on the needs of the child and I think the economic factors involved, I don't remember the exact language, is the appellate court then bound to uphold the ruling of the trial court if there's any evidence that supports the basis for that ruling?
More than a scintilla? You're talking about against a legal sufficiency attack now.
Well, I guess that's what I'm saying. If there's any evidence that supports the trial court's ruling, is the appellate court bound to uphold that? So
this court would be. I think I've got a problem if that were the circumstance. There is one distinction I want to make. Judge Morales did not deviate from the guidelines. I mean, everybody seems to be talking in terms that there was some deviation to the guidelines. The guidelines apply only to the first $4,000 of net sources. Judge Morales specifically stated in his rendition, I apply the guideline figure, the 20% to the first $4,000 and get $800. I mean, it was cited in the record. He never deviated from his from the guidelines. That's one of the things that I must take a little bit of issue with my learned adversaries. They say there's obligation on my part to have made the 14057 request. The 14057 request only has meaning if you're talking in terms of the $4,000 figure, because that's what 14052 and 14054 address. Our complaint is not with what he did to us on the first $4,000. Our complaint is what he did with us on the next $4,800. That's where we've got a complaint, and that's where we feel that he is, as would all other children that fit within that category, be limited to needs. I've got a real helpful statute here. This court promulgated guidelines which specifically address the over $4,000 net resource figure. And this court, in its guidelines, included needs, income of the obligor, and lifestyle. It is interesting to note that when the legislature amended the statute, lifestyle and income were taken out of the statute, specifically deleted. Now, my learned adversaries say, well, the reason it was done was because it was elsewhere found in 14.052 and 14.054. But the legislature did not say, at over 4,000, the court may consider the needs and those other factors limited in 14.054 and 14.052, which presumably they would have done had that been their intent. The law, I believe, has always been that needs limits the outside parameters for child support. I think this is a proper statement. I think Justice Cornett makes a good point when he says, what are to be the limitations placed on trial judges? As a trial counsel, it would be nice to be able to give my client some idea about his exposure as he goes before the judge. In this particular circumstance, once you get over $4,000, the position of Mrs. Rodriguez is you don't need any evidence of anything else. So long as the judge leaves the obligor with enough money to live on, that's the totality of his restriction. In this particular case, it's interesting to know that Mrs. Rodriguez only set forth evidence of needs at about 1742. It's interesting to note that 20% of 8,900 is like 1750.
The reason you didn't have any more evidence or any effort to get the needs over 1700 is because nobody anticipated what Judge Morales would do. Now, in this particular case, the guidelines do not apply over the $4,000 figure. The statute is clear on that. But for a judge to go over and award 28% when he says this is a 20% case, without the benefit of any evidence showing a need, we suggest that that is an abuse of discretion. It's inconsistent with the pattern that was set forth in the Texas Family Code and is not good policy for the state, because really what you're doing here is no longer supporting the children of the state who need the protection of this court, but the former spouses who, by statute, are not subject to the same protection.
Are you saying, did the trial court in the judgment specifically say, I'm awarding $800 in the first $4,000 and the additional $1,700 I'm awarding are as against the other 49?
I don't think it's recited in the decree of divorce. It is recited in the award from the bench. He specifically makes the statement of the award. I award $800 for the first $4,000, and I award $1,700 for the remainder of the income over that. So it's in the record. It's stated specifically as his rendition of judgment. That is, to be candid, the reason I didn't see a 1757 finding is because he's not outside the guidelines. It's not the guidelines with which we have complaint. It seems that my learned adversaries have one other problem. 1452 and 1454, the laundry list of items the courts can consider, and the reasons that courts may go in excess of the in excess of the guidelines, all are guideline rules. They do not deal with anything in excess of the $4,000. There's only one rule in the family code. Just one.
Let me ask you a question. I hate to interrupt you, but it's clear. The trial court awarded $2,500.
Yes.
That was the total amount.
Yes, sir.
You subtract the $800, which the guidelines presume child support.
Yes, sir.
The evidence of need establishes $1,700. So why isn't there a $2,500 award?
Well, the $800 takes care of some of that. The total need...
Well, the $800 takes care of lifestyle. $800 is a presumption based on lifestyle, all these 15 factors, and so he does the $800. Now he says anything above that's got to be based on needs only, and they've demonstrated by their evidence needs of 17-something or other, so now the total is $2,500. How do you... isn't that a reasonable interpretation of what the trial court did?
That's
you don't have to... The first element can be based on lifestyle, so you don't necessarily subtract that from needs, do you?
Yes, sir. If you will look at the list, it has all of the expenses that would ordinarily be covered by lifestyle. There's housing, there's clothing, there's food, there's transportation, there's a psychologist. This is what Mrs. Rodriguez said was her total need, not my total need for $1,700 plus their $800. All the guidelines do, besides attempting to bring some degree of consistency, which I think is a very good rule. I think it was unfortunate that you could walk into one courtroom and with the same facts get one award that was dramatically different from another. I think they have that good benefit. But all they do is overcome the need to present need evidence. You get a rebuttable presumption. That's what you do. If you're under $4,000, the court's going to say, we'll concede to the $800. We'll concede to you $1,000 if you've got two kids, and we'll concede $1,200 if you've got three. We'll concede that. You don't have to offer proof on that. The other guy can come in, however, and show the needs were less. Now, think about this for a minute. What if you were in a custodial circumstance where the total needs of the child were stipulated to be $1,000, including transportation, including clothing, including all aspects of attendance to that child's need? Would a court at that point in time be justified in going above that? I suggest no, because then you're awarding something other than child support, which this court and the legislature has consistently been unwilling to do.
But a child in impoverished circumstances and a child in very wealthy circumstances have some of the same basic needs.
Absolutely.
Yet a child in the wealthy circumstances may may be given more support because of those circumstances.
Well,
otherwise, if need as meaning subsistence plus cushion is the test, then support will always be a relatively small amount.
I agree with you that if you've got a father that makes $1,000 a month, that his child support award is going to be less than a father that makes $10,000.
Why? If the needs of children are the same.
Well, first of all, in my opinion, the needs of those two children, demonstrable by the evidence, is not going to be the same. But let's take a second aspect of this. I have no quarrel with the proposition that the trial court cannot make an award, a child support, so great as to prevent the father from having adequate living expenses. I mean, let's assume that you say the poor child's needs are exactly the same as that of a well-wealthy child. And assuming that's the truth, as a practical matter, you can't warrant the poor child as much child support as you can the wealthy child because the resources are not there in order to be able to accomplish it.
But can you award the wealthy child more because he does live in wealthy circumstances?
Sure. I mean, isn't that the way it works? I mean, it's the way it works that they're together.
That's not me.
Sir?
But that's not me.
Oh, but I think it is. In the wealthy circumstance, you still have to show need. I mean, I want you to understand, and I think that this needs to be made very, very apparent by the court's opinion. Need does not mean basic necessities. We do not advocate that. If you will look at the expense list that is promulgated by Ms. Rodriguez, we're not talking basic necessities. We're talking psychologists, transportation, $600 in housing expense. We're not talking basic necessities. And so all that the Rodriguez court says is, look, once you get beyond $4,000 and you start awarding more child support, it's got to be related to need. And the person who is seeking to get child support, has some obligation of coming forward with evidence and showing what these needs are. Now, needs can be as varied as the lifestyles of the parents. So I don't have any problem with saying as you have a wealthier family, the lifestyles might create a greater amount of needs evidence. And as you have a lesser amount of family, just they stayed together and they had the father there supporting them in the unit, a poor person's child is not going to have the resources available as much as a rich person's child. That is a reality. And the divorce action separates them, the mother and the father, and then tries to obligate the one that doesn't have the child to contribute a fair amount.
So you would say that the trial court cannot award an amount in excess of the guidelines because it's in the best interest of the child to do so?
We're over 4,000, right? Absolutely. Unless there's something tied the best interest to need. Let's say you had a child with a special need, and that was in the record. And so the best interest of the child would be accomplished by a special tutor that costs $5. Then, of course, the court can do that.
Well, it seems to me it'd be hard to argue that it's not always in the best interest of the child to award more child support, even in excess of the needs, as we might agree, needs would ordinarily be defined.
I think the court has heard me make that very argument. And I agree with you. What we go back to here, though, is this is not a case that changes the law. This is a case that demands the record support an award. If we're not going to be limited and by the way, I think today, currently, with the guidelines in place, about the only thing your trial judges are trying are the excess resource cases. At least that's the way it is in our county, because the guidelines pretty much take care of everything else. And so this is really the area which you're addressing. And I think that if there's not going to be a limit of the guidelines, you can talk about unconstitutional, unequal treatment. In this particular case, Dr. Rodriguez is being subjected to a 28% child support for no other reason than he makes $4,000. If you took the guidelines and just applied them to what he's supposed to have, he would be paying less child support, approximately the amount that the mother showed in need. So
suppose, Mr. Shah, in your argument, suppose that the evidence is based on lifestyle, based on expenses, based on whatever. The needs of the child are some figure. I don't know what that figure is, but there's evidence in there. The trial judge, up to within the $4,000 range, can award for lifestyle, correct?
Yes, sir.
You do not request a specific finding from the trial court. What part of the $800 is awarded to lifestyle? What part is awarded to expenses? How do you claim that 100% of the $800 has to be subtracted from the award of needs only in the amount over $4,000?
Because and you come back to that question, obviously I've not done a good job of answering. As I perceive the first $4,000, the purpose of that is to relieve the necessity of proof. The legislature in this court, when it promulgated its guidelines, is not saying that you ought to get a $800 gift, even though the needs are not there. What the court is saying is, we'll concede you up to $4,000 the first 20% or 25% are public. Rebuttable presumption is created that the needs are there. In this particular case, if you use the court's question as a springboard for attempting to determine what Ms. Rodriguez should have been receiving, and you take the first $800 and you say that merely is great, doesn't have anything to do with necessities or proof or anything else, and then we will apply up to the amount that a trial court might show the other expenses. In this particular case, the lady says, these are my expenses. And I must disagree with Ms. Lopez. If you look at her brief and the things that she cited, there is not one example in the record where Ms. Rodriguez sets forth that I have this other need that is not being met, or I need child care at a specified amount. I mean, there's just no inference on which to build. And it seems to me that you're double-dipping in the scenario that you're giving. You're saying, okay, but what does the $800 apply for? In theory, originally, it was supposed to be for such things as housing, clothing, transportation, food, that sort of thing. And that's what I believe that the guideline figure is for. It's to relieve anybody having to prove that up if they don't want it, and to bring certainty to the law. And if I want to dispute your needs figure, if I want to dispute that $800 as a reasonable need, I can go to a trial court and say, Judge, the needs were only $500, and here's my proof. And I'm satisfied that if a court bought that the needs were only $500, and the court would be justified, expressly justified under the guidelines, of cutting the support back to $500.
Under your argument, Ms. Rodriguez, assuming Ms. Rodriguez had net monthly resources of $4,000, $4,000 alone, Ms. Rodriguez could discharge her burden of proof by merely establishing that fact, that amount, and that there was one child, one minor child of the marriage, and the rest, and in the absence of any other evidence, that could withstand the sufficiency attack in any appellate court.
Yes, as I understand the question, you're saying if Mrs. Rodriguez proved Dr. Rodriguez had net resources of $4,000 and one child, that's all she needs.
Regardless of any proof of need or lifestyle or any other circumstances, that she could rely on the presumption created by the statute.
Exactly. And that's what the statute says. It says it's a rebuttable presumption. It gives the father, obligor, the opportunity to come in and dispute the need, and then the court can consider that, expressly can consider that. But I really think that if you take the $800 and you say you can add that on to the $1,700 when the lady has said, these are all of my expenses that I have, then you're giving her $800 for something that's not related to her expenses. And that's one of the problems that we find. In this particular case, she asked the court, expressly asked the court, for an award of her expenses. The court not only did that, but increased it by $750. Obviously, something more than the support of the child is going on. I will have you note that when I was explaining these facts to my lovely wife, I noticed that she copied down very carefully the name of the judge. I don't want to say that there was any implication from that fact, but it seems to me that even with high-resource individuals, there should be some protection. If it's not going to be the guidelines, it should be the needs. Thank you for your kind attention.
Ms. Lopez will continue argument for petitioner for 5 minutes.
Mr. Becerra's hypothetical is that in this case, the child support was not stipulated to. Mrs. Rodriguez never said, this is all of the expenses I have. She never says that. You're not going to find that in the record. Mrs. Rodriguez asked the court to award her an amount sufficient to cover her expenses. That is true. But she never said, this is all of the expenses that I have. Mr. Becerra has concentrated his argument on the position that there is no evidence of needs and that the evidence does not support the trial court's award in this case. So I want to direct you to the evidence that is before the court and that was before the trial court and the Court of Appeal. Besides the evidence of the child's basic needs that were set out in the expense list that was submitted as an exhibit in the trial court, there is ample evidence of other needs, both specific and implied. For example, the evidence that Mrs. Rodriguez is unemployed. There's no dispute that at the time of the trial she was unemployed, that she had been unemployed for several years prior to the divorce. Supports an implied finding that as a mother she would need daycare, that she was the mother of a very young child, that even when the child started school, that unless Mrs. Rodriguez was going to work full time, that she would need daycare expenses for the child. In her expense list, there is nothing listed for a car. The car that Mrs. Rodriguez asked for was the truck that Mr. Rodriguez was driving because she didn't want to have a car payment. The trial court awarded her the car with a note of about $500. That was not considered in the expense list before the court. The evidence was that as a result of the divorce, Mrs. Rodriguez and the child had had significant emotional difficulties, and there are all kinds of expenses attendant to that request that could have caused the trial court to award a little bit more money. There was evidence that as a result of the divorce, Mrs. Rodriguez was moving back to Abilene, where her family lived, in order to be closer to her family. There is all kinds of evidence that the court could have considered implied and specific that supports the kinds of expenses that a mother incurs when she's uprooting, going to a new city. There's housing deposits, there's all kinds of fees that come up attendant with a move, and the court could have considered this. And in fact, if you look at the statement of facts at page 321, when the judge is making his award, this is specifically what he says, that he is considering the fact that Ms. Rodriguez may be relocating, that he is considering the fact that she may need child support. There is evidence of all of these facts. It's not only the expenses that were listed on that petitioner's exhibit. That is just one piece of evidence, and I think that is the critical fault with the Court of Appeals opinion, because if you read that opinion, that determines the child's need, and never have the trial court, the Court of Appeals, or anybody been relegated to just one piece of evidence in determining need. To answer your question, Judge Cornyn, about how we circumcise the trial courts from awarding gross amounts of child support. I think the child support guidelines contain provisions for findings of fact and conclusions of law that require the court, not only when the court deviates, the word that the guidelines use, 14.057, and I'm sorry that we did not extract that in the provisions that we've given the court, but the word that the court uses is vary, and it uses additional amounts. When the court varies from the guidelines or awards additional amounts, then the court is directed to consider, or is directed to specify, rather, what reasons there are that support the deviation or the award of additional support. And that is what could have been done in this case, that is what was not done, and that is some monitoring of the award of child support that the trial courts can award. I note that courts all over the state have think that the Rodriguez decision means that needs are limited to bare necessities. And I think from the arguments today that neither attorney is asking you to do that. I think we both agree that needs are much more than just the basic things, the basic, as you said, necessities of life. On behalf of Mrs. Rodriguez, but also all of the attorneys, family law attorneys around the state that are grappling with the Rodriguez decision and attempting to make heads or tails of it, I thank the court for the guidance that we expect in this area. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Counsel.